The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman. And today we've seen MPs return in their droves to the House of Commons chamber to debate the situation in Afghanistan. Isabel, it's the end of the virtual parliament, so it's been the first time in over a year that we have seen the chamber packed like this. What does that mean for Boris Johnson when he stood up to give his opening statement?
Well, it has been really hard over the past year and a bit to gauge the mood of the House of Commons, because half of the Commons has been over a dodgy Zoom link. And today, as you say, was the first time that we saw the chamber packed again. And it was very clear that the House of Commons had a mood. In fact, I'd probably say the House of Commons was in a mood, because MPs were really furious with the way in which the British government has handled and responded, or indeed not responded, to the unfolding events in Afghanistan, but also with the Biden administration and the response of the US as well. We've seen a number of very powerful and angry speeches already. Keir Starmer, I think, probably gave one of the best speeches that he's given so far as Labour leader. But then he was swiftly followed by Theresa May, who was almost as critical as the Labour leader in talking about the failure of politicians in Afghanistan, and really sounding astounded to the point of not believing the suggestion that intelligence was so poor that Biden and Boris Johnson were able to say back in July, as she reminded them, that there wasn't a military route to power for the Taliban. We've also heard a coldly furious and emotional speech from Foreign Affairs Select Committee Chair Tom Tugendhat, who is one of many MPs who served in Afghanistan himself. I think the most significant thing actually out of all of the things we've seen so far has been the lack of noisy support for the government from the Tory benches. So Keir Starmer accused the Foreign Secretary of a dereliction of duty. He accused Boris Johnson of being careless, of being complacent, of there being a fundamental lack of planning. You'd normally expect there to be sounds of dissent from Conservative backbenchers when an opposition politician was making these kind of criticism. There weren't. And I think that tells us more even than the powerful speeches we've heard so far, where the Conservative Party is on this. They are not happy with the way in which the government has responded.
Yes, and as you say, Isabel, it was striking because for months now, I think the conventional wisdom has been that Boris Johnson has suffered at Prime Minister's questions by not having a full chamber, by not having his MPs sitting behind him, you know, ready to cheer him on. And yet we saw today how that doesn't necessarily help him. When it came to what Boris Johnson was setting out, I thought it was interesting in his opening remarks that he was clearly, and we had heard from him before in clips, but this was his fullest comments yet, he was trying to say that ultimately the UK had succeeded in Afghanistan if you judge them on their core mission, looking at the what had driven obviously the UK along with the US and other allies to go into Afghanistan in the first place, and saying that crucial work had been done in the years that have followed in terms of foiling terror attacks, in terms of closing down terror camps. Do you think that did much to convince MPs? I mean, as soon as he said one of those things, you had Tobias Elwood, who falls into the camp of those Tory MPs with military experience, standing up to say, well, surely even by that metric, this is a failure because we are now handing things back to the Taliban.
Yeah, I think that the fact that the Commons has returned to having interventions again after them not being possible due to the COVID restrictions and the hybrid parliament has changed the tone of debates. And often in debates, MPs from the governing party will use interventions to give the minister or the prime minister speaking a chance to catch their breath, to collect their thoughts, and to give a slightly better speech, or to sort of take the heat away from a noisy chamber. But as you say, the intervention from Tobias Elwood was just one of a number of hostile, critical interventions from Boris Johnson's own backbenches. I wonder what you thought, because you've written about Boris Johnson's speech specifically on Coffee House. What did you think about the way in which he dealt with those interventions? He was asked by Theresa May when exactly he had spoken to NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, and he basically just responded saying, "I spoke to him only the other day," which I thought was a little bit vague given the question that was being asked. What did you think?
I thought it was interesting in the first few minutes that he actually took interventions, you know, rather than getting into the main flow, and made a big point of it. He was saying, you know, "Of course I want to hear my colleagues." And then quickly, I think, as he realised that meant probably someone every 30 seconds, he decided he was not going to take so many interventions. But as you say, when he was responding to them, you didn't really get a sense he was engaging too much in the points they were making, generally speaking. And I think on the Theresa May one, I don't think Boris Johnson wanted to get into conversation about when he had spoken to certain people. But I think it was also quite clear from that intervention and others that Boris Johnson is adamant that there was not a military solution to this after the US decided to pull out. And that is something which does put him at loggerheads with several of his MPs who I think do believe that the current situation now could have been avoided, or at the very least could have been less chaotic than it has played out. And I think that you can see Boris Johnson trying to mount defence, but also as a result of that, not fully engaging when it comes into specifics to talk through that.
I think it's fair to say that if Boris Johnson had an uncomfortable session, that the person feeling the most discomfort was Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, who didn't look like he had a particularly relaxing holiday, it has to be said, what holiday he did have before he eventually decided to come back to this country. He was specifically named in a number of speeches, particularly Keir Starmer, who said you cannot coordinate an international response from the beach. Katie, what do you think is the mood amongst Conservative backbenchers about Raab? He was clearly taking a lot of the criticisms very personally and seemed very, very angry, actually, during a lot of the opening speeches. And I noticed that at one point, Bob Seeley, a Conservative backbencher, made a point of order to complain that Ian Blackford's speech, which was characteristically long, had turned into a conversation between him and Dominic Raab. Where do you think the Foreign Secretary's standing is amongst Conservative MPs generally?
As you say, he looked very unhappy throughout that, partly because you had opposition figures who kept bringing up the holiday. That was clearly riling Dominic Raab. I don't think there was that much sympathy on the Tory benches for Dominic Raab at the moment. I think that if you look at the general anger and the fact that there's really been not much at all that's been supportive towards Boris Johnson and the government so far in this debate, some of the most, I think, difficult interventions for the government have come from the Tory side. I think if you look at that, I think it reflects the sense that the government has mishandled this. Now, there is a debate within the Tory party about how exactly they have mishandled it. So there are some who do think that there was an alternative after the US decided to pull out. There was a way to have that continued military presence and that could have avoided some of this. There are others who do think probably it was inevitable that the UK would have to leave Afghanistan and you'd have a situation where the Taliban would take control, but it didn't have to be done in this way. And I think the problem with the debate for Dominic Raab is in all these scenarios, I don't think anyone thinks, well, that was a good idea of Dominic Raab to stay on the beach, although he disputes the exact length of time, you know, on Sunday night while all this is playing out. And then you couple with that the fact that there is clearly friction between the MOD and the Foreign Office. And I think MPs are far more charitable and supportive of Ben Wallace at the moment and the work the Ministry of Defence has been doing in getting people out than they are with the Foreign Office. And that's partly because the Ministry of Defence are ultimately saying, you know, it's not their strategy. They're just doing the work of trying to help people in the situation they now find themselves in. So that's politically a more easy situation. But it also is the case that Ben Wallace wasn't on holiday in Cyprus.
Yeah, I think when you're having an argument with the press about the length of time that you spent on a beach.
Yeah, and I had, MPs complaining to me about some of the interviews Dominic Raab had given, because I think he corrected a journalist this week to say, no, I wasn't in Cyprus on Monday. I was only there at the weekend. And I was saying, well,
great.
Exactly. Like, listen, let's not draw any more attention to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Isabel, in terms of where this all goes next, I think one of the things we're seeing is clearly a moving speech from Tom Tugendhat. Lots of emotional, heartfelt interventions so far. Lots of blame. If you look at what Theresa May has been saying, she's definitely one of those senior Tories very much making the case that the government could have handled things differently. This wasn't inevitable. But where do you think this is all going? Because there's no vote today. And as far as I can tell yet, no one's come up with a strong alternative plan yet of what the government should do, how they should change strategy, other than perhaps saying they should take more in terms of this scheme to resettle.
Yeah, there's been a lot of criticism of the bespoke arrangements for refugees, which have been sort of cobbled together at the last minute and which seem very, very small and very easy to criticise when you're talking about resettling people over the next few years. Well, you know, the point that's been made by a number of MPs is people aren't even sure if they have days rather than years to wait. I think there's also been a push from a lot of MPs, particularly former forces MPs, for there to be less reliance on the United States as the sort of ally who calls the shots. We've mentioned Tom Tugendhat's speech a few times, and that contained a plea for Britain to reinvigorate its alliances with European NATO members and to work with other countries such as Australia and Japan so that they could, in his words, I think it was, hold the line, so that it's not just a case, as we've seen in this instance, of the US saying, right, we're out, and Britain having to say, well, we can't stay in. So I think there will be a longer term debate now about British foreign policy, and Boris Johnson doesn't really like this phrase, but the special relationship and what that relationship is going to look like. Now Joe Biden seems to be pursuing a sort of Democrat-flavoured America First policy, and it's very uncomfortable for a lot of people, because it was much easier, much more comfortable for lots of people on both sides of the House to criticise Donald Trump, to react with anger to foreign policy decisions that he made. But actually the feeling of betrayal from British MPs and from those serving in the armed forces is much stronger towards Joe Biden for continuing the deal that Donald Trump brokered. And that has only been soured further by his comments, which a lot of MPs have called shameful, about his claim that the Afghan forces just turned and ran.
Thank you, Isabel, and thank you for listening.